Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Dominic Patton.
And I'm Pete Hammond.
And this is the Deadline Podcast TV Talk. Emmy nominations, round two. We're still at it.
Today we're going to discuss not the shows we expected necessarily to get in because they keep getting nominated or they've had great success. How do you break into an Emmy race that seems mired in the past, in the familiar, in the things voters run to? How does a show suddenly on its first season get in and get major nominations? That's what we're going to talk about today. And you're also going to hear from one of those veteran shows that's been nominated many times, including Sandra Oh. She, speaking of getting nominated over and over, has had 13 Emmy nominations, and I recently spoke to her for the Actors Side, and you'll hear a snippet of that conversation as well today.
But before that, let us talk about shows that don't star Brian Cox. So, I mean, I'm just going to cut to the chase here. So you look at a number of shows like Severance, you look at Squid Game, and a number of others. These are shows that on their first season broke through, let's call it the clutter, for lack of an expression. And there are a lot of different ways for looking at that, a lot of different ways. But I think the main thing here is we are now seeing, I mean, we're still in a pandemic, but let's say we're in a new and different phase of the pandemic. I think what we're seeing here is the proliferation of not just broadcasters and programmers, but streamers have now reached a maturity. Whereas in 2019, pre-pandemic, I mean, a lot of these guys didn't even exist. Now they're all kind of seasoned vets. And I think as a part of that, their campaigns have now found ways to find plateaus, ways to find niches, ways to find just sheer demographic penetration. And that's what's happening here. And it doesn't hurt when you have bragging rights. And what I mean by that, I'll use Severance as an example, Ben Stiller. You roll Ben Stiller out, man, that is a good name to drop. It's a good person to have at an FYC. It's a good person to have wanting to shake your hand and take a photograph with you on a step and repeat. That, I think, is how you break through.
And I think the interesting one, you mentioned Squid Game. Squid Game is so different than anything else in the race, and it became a global sensation that it pretty much would have been near impossible for the Academy to ignore it. They had to go there. There was no question on that. So there is that rare kind of unique thing that, you know, breaks through. Foreign language series never happened. So this was their chance and they knew it was different enough. So it played there.
But here's the thing about that I find interesting is, let's talk about who didn't break through. Reservation Dogs, which is one of the most acclaimed television shows out there in decades. Peabody Award winner. Nothing, man, like dead air. So where do you think Netflix went right and where did FX go wrong?
Well, I don't think Netflix could really go too wrong with Squid Game because it was such a viral sensation that it was generating its own campaign, its own publicity, just by the nature of being this breakthrough, have to see it, have to talk about it, show that rare thing that could pop like that. So, I don't think Netflix was taking something they had to build necessarily for Emmy voters. They just had to put it out there and make sure that also those actors, you know, they had won at SAG. And so SAG sort of led the way. And sometimes that can help with new shows. Look, the Golden Globes is certainly, troubled right now, but it has.
I believe the term is DOA, my friend.
Well, it has traditionally served in the television field as a breakthrough for things that will later go to the Emmys in an odd way. You know, they actually were conscious of bringing in new stuff. And so that is how some of these shows getting that early recognition, Critics' Choice as well, with critics who are a little more hip to the room, bringing attention to these kinds of shows. And that certainly happened in this case with SAG, which usually follows everybody.
Yeah.
Acknowledging this. And so I think there was that. The one that surprised me the most, and now doesn't because I've since talked to a lot of people in the industry, is, you mentioned Ben Stiller, is Severance, that 14 nominations on its first time out, Apple. It's a very quirky series in its own way, different. But I did a thing for Contenders where that we asked an extra question, at the end of them for the interstitial. Yeah. And it's like, what show would you have liked to work on this year that wasn't your show? All four of the people from different facets of the Television Academy, all four said the same show, Severance. And they all had their own reasons why. And I go like, wow. So the industry discovered that show, however they discovered it, and really watched it. And you can tell where those votes are coming from.
Well, I think one, you have Ben Stiller and you also have Adam Scott. And there's a lot of other fairly big names in the show. So you've got a fair degree of name recognition. You also have, I think, a really good degree of what I would call narrative empathy, which is, here's a show about workplace politics and the kind of pervasive, looming and detrimental model of corporate capitalism. This is stuff that Hollywood loves to bang on about, right? Even though Hollywood's pretty corporate itself. But so you have all those, you have a very distinct visual style that's very easy to understand. And you have, I think, great timing. Because coming out of the pandemic's early years, you have this feeling that people have about the workplace, going into the workplace, being out of the workplace. You set this drama in a workplace environment that is literally holding you psychologically hostage. People are going to respond. That I think so much, and we talked about this on a previous TV talk. I think you can throw millions in FYC campaigns each way, up and down, billboards, whatever. But if your story doesn't feel like it connects to the zeitgeist, you are swimming upstream, my friend.
And if you haven't convinced them to actually watch.
Yeah, exactly. When it comes down to it, those 20,000 members of the TV Academy are like everyone else. They got stuff to do, man. And they're like, you're going to get me to sit down and watch a show?
Yeah.
More than I think most people give like 15 minutes, 20 minutes to a pilot. And then they start making decisions. If you want to keep me beyond that, you need to make me feel like this is not only well done, which is important, but made me feel like this is connected to my life and my times right now. Because, as you said a million times, and we'll talk about it in this one as well, there's a lot of familiar names out there that people can just default to pretty quickly, start checking off boxes, and get on with the rest of their life.
Yeah, it does seem, though, for instance, like in the comedy category, last year you had both Hacks and Ted Lasso completely dominating both first seasons. In fact, Hacks didn't come in until the last minute during the season for people to see it. And yet it won 3 major Emmys. And of course, Ted Lasso won 7. So there was that huge breakthrough there, too. So maybe the Academy's changing a little bit and wanting to honor things and not doing the same thing, over and over, like Modern Family winning 5 years in a row and that kind of thing. We're seeing different winners now every single year,
But I would say also, maybe. I mean, I think a lot of this is, I think you and I, there's some tea leaf reading, clearly. But I'd also would say, then you've got something like Only Murders in the Building, which has, we're repeating old episodes. Whatever happened with not giving Selena Gomez a nomination, somebody needs to get out into the real world or at least go onto Instagram once.
But it's still got 17 without Selena.
Yeah, including the show, including Steve Martin, including Martin Short. Again, names that everybody knows. My grandmother sadly passed away not too long ago, but I use my grandmother's. If I can mention a name, like my grandmother would say, what are you working on? I say, I'm writing a story about Johnny Depp. She knows who Johnny Depp is, right? She knows who Martin Short and Steve Martin are. So like that level of recognition, you then go down a grade and you're like, oh, and then people like They remember the Three Amigos. They remember SCTV. They remember SNL. They remember The Jerk, whatever. They already have a connection. So you're, as they say in politics, your favorability rating ratings start going up, 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 up. That, again, I think when you look at Only Murders in the Building, I bring it back to my Severance point. I think it jumps genres, which is if you have names that people know and they're defining, again, Only Murders in the Building, yeah, a lot of people walking around, not many with masks, to be honest. But so many people during the pandemic got so involved in podcasts because they would go, the only thing they could do is like go for a walk. So they put their headphones on and listen to a podcast. So when you have a show about a true crime podcast, which is true crime podcast, of course, being the most popular with the exception of Joe Rogan, which might be a true crime unto himself, in my opinion.
I believe he is, yeah.
You have this, you have yet again another narrative that is fitting with the times. And that to me is, that's a breakthrough breakout point you can't get past.
Right. It's interesting. And, you know, also I want to point out Euphoria finally broke in and its second season into the drama series race. Now, it wasn't the first time, but Zendaya made such a splash when she won 2 years ago. It was such a surprise. And I think that's the driving force that got voters to actually pay attention to the show.
Then Zendaya is the tide that lifts all ships, my friend.
And I think that's why we saw that breakthrough in a much bigger way this year. Then there's an odd duck show like Yellow Jackets, you know, which switches back and forth between the teenagers and then themselves 3 decades later, however much it is, you know, dealing with a plane crash where they aren't rescued for 19 months and they turn into savages basically, and then have to deal with it the rest of their lives. That's not a normal kind of dramatic series that would normally get in here, yet it did. And it's on Showtime, which has not had a lot of luck in recent years with any of their series in a big way. So breaking into these kind of categories, maybe Shameless for a while. But, you know, what do you think? How did that do it?
I think Yellow Jackets was a very powerful TV show. I mean, I think, as you talked about, the jumping back and forth. And I think that for a lot of viewers, they saw this collection of female friends or colleagues, I guess, and the secrets and betrayals and hard, hard truths. I'm not going to give it away if you haven't seen it, but trust me, you might want to be careful what you have for dinner tomorrow, or go vegan. And I think that's a very visceral thing. And I think that you got some good names in there, Juliette Lewis, obviously being one of them. And so I think that captured attention. I also do think, though, you dissed on them, but I think Showtime actually put a pretty good campaign together, because I think they took advantage of the fact that people were feeling a little bit more comfortable going out to FYC events, a little bit more comfortable being grounded. They were relentless in getting their cast out there and getting screenings out there and having people know about this show. So if you weren't a Yellow Jackets fan first time around, if you remember the TV Academy, you were very, very hard pressed not to know that this show was out there and was asking for your attention.
Yeah, well, the writer's branch is always one step ahead. Not that I'm just because I'm in it, but they always look for something, and they nominated two.
As we do in every TV talk, we always point out that Mr. Hammond is currently still a member of the TV Academy, and I am a former member of the TV Academy.
But nevertheless, they nominated two scripts, both by the same writers, which I don't recommend. I think they should just submit one script, especially if it's the same writers. Then, you know, that this lessens their chance of actually winning, but it shows that they're looking at that show. And I also want to mention Abbott Elementary, which is also oddball because it's coming from a broadcast network, which has had tremendous problems breaking through. Talk about breaking through. Did you ever think you'd have the day when you say, I really feel sorry for those broadcast networks? They just can't break through in the Emmy.
Yeah. I mean, for years, I mean, that was the great conceit of The Good Wife, right? I mean, The Good Wife was the broadcast show that kept showing up in drama when the cablers owned all of it. And then the streamers came along. And, you know, if there was barely enough room before, they just pushed the broadcast up. You and I talked about this in a previous season. You know, I really thought that This Is Us was going to have a good chance. Final season, past winners, good pedigree, et cetera, great cast. And they were like, that was a dust bowl, baby.
Zero.
It was like it never happened. It's like, oh, it ended. Oh, well.
So we have Abbott at Elementary. It represents great diversity, you know,
at the network. It's incredibly funny.
and in the Emmys, and a terrific cast. And that sort of, that connected in its first season. Something got through to the Academy members, despite the fact that it's on ABC, but maybe helped by the fact that it's on Hulu.
Yeah, well, I think in future years, I mean, we all know the example of Schitt's Creek, right?
Right.
On the CBC, north of the border, on Pop down here, I mean, dude, if you can spell Pop, you probably still can't find it on the dial.
I have no idea where it is.
But then the season started showing up on Netflix, which reminded me, you know, remember the old thing back in the day? Remember 24, which is one of my all-time favorite shows, the first season? 24 did okay. I mean, its timing was terribly great insofar as it was the first kind of, it was a drama that came out not too long after 9/11 and certainly tapped into that feeling of fear, terror, paranoia, etc. But it didn't do that great. And then after the first season, the box set of the first season was available on DVD and just busted out. It was it was Kiefer Sutherland everywhere. Like people were watching the show in real time on their DVD players. And that, I think, really, so when you came back for a season two, 24 was on fire. I think that that's clearly what happened with Schitt's Creek. And that may be what's happening here with Abbott Elementary, but it's really hard to gauge that. I mean, because it's like, then conversely, I'm like, well, there's all these other shows that are on streamers that not a baby. So I don't know.
No, you know, and but before we go on to my interview with Sandra Oh, I do want to point out not a breakouts, but breakdowns in terms of getting into the comedy series race, where they've been, all three of them, fairly consistently throughout their life in different seasons. But Atlanta, Insecure, and Blackish, none of them are represented in the best comedy series race. What do they all have in common? They're all creatively created by Black filmmakers, creators, producers.
With a distinct point of view and I would say substantial cultural and sociological input. I will say—
What happened?
Before we get into that, but I will say, and I'm never one to cut the TV Academy any slack, as a member and now former member.
Yeah.
Donald Glover did get nominated and Issa Rae did get nominated. So they were not devout.
That's the actors branch, though. Yeah. I'm talking about the Academy at large that has put them in the top series race. And it's just, I don't know. Is it a coincidence? Is there a deeper
reason? I mean, look, we're two white guys yakking about TV.
I know, but let me tell you,
I felt that way about Reservation Dogs too.
Right. That's another one we could easily put on this list. Is there suddenly a problem with diversity a little bit here this year?
I think Hollywood, like most of America, has a very short attention span. I think most people move on past a news cycle, or they hear of some congressman introducing a bill or some police chief resigning, and there's a little bit of like, oh, well, that dealt with. Good, fine, move on. New thing, inflation, deal with that. Right. More than one or two topics. I mean, you know.
It's interesting.
People talk about the war in Ukraine right now. That's kind of fallen off the map, right?
Right, you know, I guess
and
you're
I
right.
I feel like that what has happened here is since the great uprisings of 2020, the tragedies of Breonna, the tragedies of George Floyd, and many, 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 many others, and people taking to the street, and a consciousness level that had not been seen since perhaps the late 60s, in terms of civil rights at least. I feel now there's a blacklash, but I feel like there's definitely a kind of like, okay, I feel like you got me, I felt terrible, I feel bad, but you know, I really just want to take my dog for a walk. And that's, I'm just being blunt with you. I think a lot of people are like that. And that's not cool. And it's not good. And it's going to come back to bite them and this country and this industry in the ass. And unfortunately, incredibly good shows, incredibly
talented. That's what I was going to say. These are three terrific shows, even now into their third, fourth, fifth, eighth seasons.
And in two of the cases, Insecure and Blackish, Final seasons
there.
Atlanta, you know, penultimate season.
It seems like, I don't know. It seems a shame. It's a miss there, but you know, we're here.
Yeah, but I think you're right. I mean, you're being very polite about it because you're a very polite person. But I think there's an element of race. I think there's an element of culture. I think there's an element of diversity. I think there are a lot of white people around Hollywood, like there are around America, who feel like they feel, oh, you know, I did what I did. I donated to the ACLU. Leave me alone. Yep. And I think that they're now like, hey, yeah, so now let's go back to this. Having said that, no argument is a an infinity loop, and you do see things like, you do see the breakthroughs of things like Abbott Elementary, which has African-American creators, primarily African-American and people of color casts. And so I think that there is in Hollywood, as there is in America, as there is in the world, there is a conflict between the just and the easy. And there is a conflict between the adventurous and creative and the familiar. And the Emmys, sad to say, again, I come back to Reservation Dogs because I just think it's glaring, but I think these other examples of Atlanta and Insecure not receiving nominations for the shows, and Blackish, very, very, very true as well. I think that that's a sad reality that we have to still keep talking about, because I think we have to see action.
We are. And I want to say, in line with this too, I had a wonderful conversation with Sandra Oh, who made history at the Emmys with all of her nominations as Asian Pacific actress and producer and all the things that she has, 13 nominations. She had two series this year, one that got no nominations on Netflix called The Chair, but also was a breakout. She was star of that show, and that had a lot to say about the world and diversity too, in a small town college. And then, of course, Killing Eve. In the final season here, she is nominated again against her co-star, Jodie Comer. And we talked about a lot of this stuff. And here is part of that conversation. Sandra Oh, welcome.
Hi,
two series that we're talking about here this season alone. The Chair, which is so terrific on Netflix, which is something you got to see, that you're also an executive producer on, as you are on Killing Eve, which everybody knows about, and has finished.
Yes.
It's the finale.
I can't believe it. Like, the finale just happened, and it's all, spoiler alert, it's all over.
It's all over. They know now. They definitely know now. And what do you think about the end? Well, while we're talking about that, the finale, it was very interesting. Mm. I mean, if you don't want to know, just go like this. But it I thought it was not where I thought it was going to go.
Tell me, what did you think?
I thought either both of you. I didn't think it was going to be her alone. And then that last shot of you emerging and, you know, just screaming. It was amazing. You know,
I'm so glad you said that. You know what? I got to tell you, honestly, it was going to be the other way around.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So it was going to be the other way around. So when I was talking to Laura Neal, our head writer, that was at the beginning of 20. So that's probably January of 20.
Yeah.
And we were chatting about how do we want to end this, blah, 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 blah. I was like, you should kill my character. I think that would be, I thought that would be the strongest and the most interesting. And not only that, I felt emotionally it was the right place of where I was at. Because at the end of season three, I just felt like Eve was starting to get into a kind of like a nihilistic place.
Right.
And we're like, let's continue that line and let's just go straight into it. And then, of course, the pandemic happened. Yeah. And then somewhere in the summertime, they came to me and they said, we can't do it. We need to change it. It's like Eve needs to live. We think that after and during this time.
I think the audience wants that. Yeah.
I think that's also as well, because, like, you know, Eve is the way into this world.
Yeah.
She's our every woman. So it's kind of like really super depressing if she dies. So we switched it around, and Jody was very, very much on board with that. And then the end, again, I'm so happy that you said that, because that end shot is actually the end shot that I shot.
Oh, that's the last thing you did?
Yeah, it was tough. We did all of the tank work.
Wow.
The very last day, we spent like 9-10 hours in the tank.
Oh, my God.
And so Jody's last shot of when Villanelle is being pulled away was her last shot.
Wow.
It was very emotional for both of us. And then that last... when Eve kind of comes up and then she has her kind of
moment.
Yeah, sure. Life cry or whatever you want to call that. That was my last shot. And it was like, as it is, you know, there's no time, the camera's breaking, all that stuff. It's like, all right, we think we got it. And that's it. And I'm like, okay. So that's how it,
I think it also, it's up to the audience now to chart Eve's future for themselves. You know, and unless you're going to do a spinoff I don't know about.
No.
Which, because I think people are rooting for her to have
a nice time going forward.
Yeah, or a life. You know
a
what
life.
I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And in the metaphor of it, you know, it's like when you get what you needed to get out of a relationship.
Right.
How do you keep moving on?
How do you keep moving? Which is perfect because the relationship between them was so intriguing and goes in so many different directions, but they needed each other.
Yes.
And to come to the places where they were. And, you know, and you and Jody, just phenomenal together.
Thank you.
All that awards attention was well deserved.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are you going to miss it? Are you going to miss that? Were you ready to move on?
You know, it's hard because it's like sometimes I feel like no one really cares about this or really wants. I found that show really hard.
Yeah.
I found the show really, really hard, very, very challenging to shoot because there's something about the emotional weight of Eve, of having lost everything. And the way that I just feel like I'm working nowadays is like when you are playing a character who has to grow and change, I have just found it... like a thing that it has to happen in my own body.
Right.
You know what I mean? So the digging deep to go, episode 7, it was a very confusing episode for me, and I tried to make it the most existential because she's asking the questions of like, what is the purpose of life? How do I go on? How do I continue on with life?
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, also, during the pandemic, I, as I'm sure we all were, it was very much a question that I think that we all had.
Yeah.
And so I just thought it was hard. It was hard. It was hard to say, she's tried this, she's tried that. How do I continue going on when it seems to me that this world can't change or that I don't know how to end the 12 or I think that I've ended the 12 and still I am feeling... I'm left with these feelings. How do I go on?
Questions that are killing Eve.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Well, that was a great conversation, Pete. And I really hope that you guys enjoyed our conversation today for this episode of TV Talk. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Deadline Podcast TV Talk. And give us your feedback. You know, you can email us or you can always send a tweet or what have you. We'd love to hear what you guys think. And we want to evolve the conversations because it's very interesting to talk about this show up, this show down. But there are larger cultural and sociological threads and tides here. And that's a part of our conversation. That's a part of our industry, too. So make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you never miss an episode of TV Talk.
And of course, you can find all of our TV breaking news coverage at deadline.com.
Join us next week. We're going to be back talking more Emmys, more TV. We're going all the way to September 12th, my friends. Stick around for the ride. Until then, talk to you soon.